Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, March 6th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
I'm numbed enough so that I can take you when we're alone. I don't listen anymore. But if I do listen, I sift everything so I don't really hear you, which is about the only way to manage it.
Oh, snap! Holy cow! We haven't had a sex education show since late October. Now that's just not right. Luckily, I have the solution to that dilemma on tap today. We welcome back this series that takes a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative lifestyles, and we do so with a remarkably talented and oh-so-pervy woman who lives right here in the Emerald City.
Oh, boy. You really are having a field day, aren't you?
I guess I am, because my guest today is Gina Hunting. She is an educator, activist, and woman of great wisdom. And she's as edgy as all get out. Just wait till you hear the litany of things that make her happy. And I can assure you, it ain't eating bonbons and watching her favorite TV programs, if you catch my drift. You'll find more about Gina on her FetLife page and or her Facebook page. She is Gina Hunting on both. She also wants me to alert you to one of her upcoming programs titled Women in Kink. Wink is open to all women who play with women. So if you feel you belong in women's space, then you belong at Wink. Look for all these links in today's podcast posting.
You can sit around with the gin running out of your mouth. You can humiliate me. You can tear me to pieces all night. That's perfectly okay. That's all right.
Today's podcast posting is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this pervy series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes, Aree Sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Gina, and thank you for joining us. I'm so delighted that we could make this time to be together for this sex education podcast. Now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the really nice people and the pervy people, too?
Hey, so what do you mean? Pervy people can't be nice?
Oh, well, they
Hi,
can.
This is Gina.
Before we begin, I want to ask you a question that I've asked almost all of the local folk who I've chatted with for this series, Bondage Lessons Max, Lady Lydia, Mistress Catherine, Tonya Winter, Twisted Monk, Mistress Matisse, Tony Buff, Sinister Brain, and Bendy Yoga Girl, to name a few. Is the Pacific Northwest, in general, and Seattle in particular, a hotbed of perversion, or is this just wishful thinking on my part?
A hotbed. I like the sound of that. One of the things I love to do when I travel is check out the local scenes. And I think we are quite blessed in this area to have a vibrant and thriving scene. I very much enjoy it. I haven't found anything quite like it in other places.
Yes, I totally agree, too. I was kind of surprised when I moved here, actually, that it was so nutty that way. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so I've spent a great deal of time on your FetLife page. Holy cow, you have your hands full, so to speak. You eat, drink, and sleep this stuff, huh?
Well, I try to have other interests, but yeah, this takes a fair amount of my time. But it's good time.
Okay. Is it safe to say that being a Dom is your way of life? I mean, your commitment to the BDSM, leather, and power play scenes goes way beyond casual, occasional play acting, I'm guessing.
Well, so I wouldn't use the word Dom.
Okay, good, good, good.
And is this a way of life? I think this is, for me, a hobby. It's a thing I do. It's a really important thing to me. I would miss it if I weren't able to do it.
Uh-huh.
But it's a thing I do, not a thing I am.
Okay.
And that's just for me personally.
Okay, good, good, good. Thank you so much for that. And you're such a fascinating person. I hardly know where to begin our conversation. So let me begin by asking, is Gina Hunting your given name or your scene name?
It's my scene name.
I see. Cool. Everybody has to have a scene name these days, or always, I'm guessing.
Not everyone, but I choose to keep a little bit of division between my my vanilla life and my kink life.
Because surprised, because there's very little light between Dr. Dick and Richard Wagner, so.
Yeah.
But
well,
there you go.
Different strokes for different folks,
absolutely,
I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, now let's begin at the beginning, shall we? You write about yourself on your FetLife page. It is not the pain, per se, nor the sight of a beauty bound that draws me to the scene, but the intensity of the bond that forms between the players. Now, that's about as succinct a statement as ever was, and I suspect that people unfamiliar with the scene might only see the externals and completely miss the intensity and the intimacy in BDSM. I guess that's why it's such an off-putting concept for so many. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to get kind of distracted by the particular styles of play and the ooh ick. But really, this is such a powerful way to find a level of connection with another person. I think it's just amazing.
Yes. And I'm guessing that vanilla people would learn a lot if they paid closer attention to those in the scene.
I think so. I think looking for that intimacy. Also, we have some superpowers that vanilla people don't have, like our culture of negotiation and
right.
consent.
Right.
Negotiation is just such a wonderful tool. And I find that I use it in so many parts of my life, work life and other things. Being clear about what I want and being able to ask for it, and also being able to prompt other people, what do you
right.
want? What do you need?
Right.
What are your limits?
Right.
These are all concepts that are as true in a work relationship or a family relationship as they are when you're getting ready to beat somebody silly.
I love it. You're so understated. So you go on to say about your interests, first of all, brutality. I hit, claw, bite, and I growl. I make rope hurt. I shake and toss my plaything like a rag doll. I'm a big, strong woman, and I like to use all my strength. And sharp things. Knives are delightful for cutting off clothes, inducing fear, and leaving blood trails. Needles are beautiful. They create little knobs to push and pull. Blood makes me happy. Yikes! You're beginning to scare me.
I think you're safe from me on the other end of the Skype call.
But it's some dark alley. I'll never know if I'm going to meet you or not.
Only if we negotiate first.
I love it, I love it, I love it. So has this been part of your life all your life, or did you come to this later in life? I mean, the reason that I ask is that so many of the people who have preceded you on this show have talked about being pervy from birth.
You know, about 15 years ago or so, I was with my partner at the time in the car, and she turned to me and said, "Have you ever thought about this S&M stuff?" And I said, "No, but that's interesting." So,
I love it.
So a little bit of research later, and we were off to our first play party and just kind of off to the races with it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So, and like, what was the turnaround time? A matter of weeks or months or...
Oh, weeks, days.
Oh, get out. Days.
Yeah, no.
It might have been
a few weeks, but yes. And yeah, we just dived into it head first.
No kidding. That is
Yeah, and kind of took to it like fish to water.
I love it. You go on to say, "I love the bubble that forms around a scene, transporting the players away from time and place. I love skin contact and eye contact. I love feeling my bottom go from resisting to submitting and from fear to acceptance. I love ending a scene feeling that we've both given all that we have to give. Having found it was more than what we thought we had to give." That's truly astonishing. You know, if two lovers professed this very thing in their wedding vows, not an eyebrow would be raised. But in this context, a lot of eyebrows in our audience probably are arching skyward. So is all of this simply a matter of context?
I think that's fair to say. I think that level of, as we were talking about before, that level of intimacy is the thing that attracts me to mm-hmm. BDSM. It's the thing that I enjoy so much. Also, that living in the moment, that I don't know about you, but I've got this big old brain and it does all kinds of stupid thinking. And I look for ways in my life to turn it off and mm-hmm. to be in the moment. Mm-hmm. And this is... kink, BDSM, is one of the ways that can truly just keep me there, not thinking, but doing, right. And being.
Right. Well, you know, curious that you asked that question. That's something that I try to do as well, but I see it so frequently in my private practice. I mean, people contact me through Dr. Dick and in my practice, and you know, I can tell from how they're expressing themselves, either in their message to me online or in my office, and I can tell that they're not the least bit connected with their body. You know, they're so involved in the thought process, and which is a good thing, and it certainly makes us different from a lot of the other creatures that populate this planet. But it's not the be-all and end-all, and sometimes it's the very thing that gets in the way of a happy, healthy, and integrated sex life.
Mm-hmm. I can completely believe that.
Mm-hmm. Gosh. So you write, "I'm open to finding new masochistic playmates. I'm looking for casual play relationships, one or many a time, but not for relationships outside of the play. I enjoy the process of flirtation, negotiation, and discovery. I play only with women and gender queers." Okay, let's pull that apart a bit, shall we? For those in our audience unversed in this scene vocabulary, tell us why you make the distinction between playmates and relationships.
I'm not looking for romance.
Ah.
I'm not looking for love in the scene. I'm looking for play. I'm looking for interactions in the scene. I very much enjoy doing, I suppose I'm getting ahead of myself, but I very much enjoy doing that first time play, but I also really like the ongoing relationships that the ongoing play relationships that I have within the scene.
Nice.
But it's very different from the romantic relationships that I've had.
No roses unless it's all thorns, I'm guessing.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, I love it, I love it, I love it. So, again, for those people in our audience who don't know Shinola, could you define genderqueer?
Well, I like people who don't fit well into the categories of male and female.
Uh-huh.
I very much enjoy the perspective that that gives people. I'm trans.
Uh-huh.
I'm a male to female transsexual. I like that energy. I think there's something that people who have explored their gender have, and that's this some self-examination that most of the population haven't had to do.
Right. So you're, just to be clear, you're saying that someone could be a cisgender male or female, but that person could also be genderqueer because he or she is, you know, fluid about their understanding of gender and how they express themselves.
That's correct, yeah.
Very cool. And when I use cisgender, that is different than transgender, or the other end of that spectrum, I'm guessing.
Good. And I guess the people that leaves off of this list is cis men.
Yes.
Who I more or less don't play with.
There have
been exceptions, but they're rare.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hit you up someday, don't you know? I'll change your mind about us cis men. You know what they say, once you go there, you never go back. No,
oh,
they never
really?
Say that.
okay.
All righty then. So, again, you write, I got into the scene in the mid-90s in San Francisco. After I moved to Seattle, I participated in the opening of the Wet Spot and played there regularly. I took an 8-year hiatus due to a vanilla relationship and found my way back 2 years ago. What attracted you to the scene in the first place? You recounted that story about you and your partner in the car, and she asks you a question about this. It was anything else involved in the attraction initially?
So I think the things that I loved about it in the beginning are probably the things I still love about it. I love the otherness about it, the specialness of it. And a big part of that is we have these special places to do our BDSM stuff. We have special clothing. That's always been a big part of it for me. It's a kind of transformational aspect.
Right.
Of the clothing. And then whether I'm bottoming or topping, I was mostly a bottom at that time to
Is
my
that
heart.
Right? Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I think there's a tremendous amount of power in bottoming and just feeling that power flowing through me as I was processing the pain and playing back and forth with my partner. Wow, that's heady stuff.
It is. It most assuredly is. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so intimidating to a lot of people. It's so powerful. And, you know, like, I refer back to my private practice, and on occasion I meet women who are pre-orgasmic, for example, and one of the reasons that they're pre-orgasmic, even though they're quite adult, is that they, you know, are afraid. They've said this to me, you know, like, you know, if I have an orgasm, then I'll always want to have that's all I want to do. I'll forget about the kids, and I'll forget about shopping, and I'll forget about doing laundry, and I'll just want to have orgasms all the time. I mean, it's a lovely thought.
Those are some damn fine orgasms.
And you should bottle that, don't you know?
Seriously.
Really. So, anyhow, just as an aside, you and I were both in San Francisco at the same time. I lived in San Francisco from 1978 through 1998, mm-hmm. Before moving up here to the Emerald City. Do you like it here?
I do, although the Bay Area still feels like home to me.
Yes, me too. curiously enough.
Interesting.
Yeah, it really is. I've made a lot of connections with a lot of people here, but I don't feel like it's home necessarily after 14 years. It's odd.
Yeah, I moved up in 1998 as well, and you would think by this time.
One would. Anyhow, so I have to ask you something. You say that you took an 8-year hiatus from the scene for the sake of a vanilla relationship, and my question is, can one actually set aside one's proclivities like that? I always imagine that this stuff is bred in the bone, so to speak.
Well, like I said earlier, for me, this is somewhere around a very important hobby to me. This is a thing I do, not a thing I am. And it made sense. The kind of what I got out of that relationship, at least in the beginning, it was a good bargain.
Right. Okay. Good.
I was. It was a price I was willing to pay. When that relationship ended, I was very clear about the first thing I was doing was getting back into the scene.
Look out!
Yeah, here I come again. And interestingly, I knew that I wanted to come back as a top.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So tell me more about that. That's fascinating to me.
Well, I mentioned before that I'm trans.
You're right.
And that 8-year relationship happened around, roughly started around the beginning of my transition.
I see.
I don't know, perhaps coming into my power as a woman has helped me come into my power as a top.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow. But clearly you've been thinking about this some. I would guess so. Goodness gracious, that sounds really wonderful.
Yeah.
Are people who are into BDSM psychologically messed up, do you think? The reason I ask that is that a whole bunch of people in my audience, and I hear from folks all the time on Dr. Dick, like, what is it with these folks? They've got to be messed up.
I think proportion, the prevalence of psychologically messed up, by the way, is that a technical term?
Yes, absolutely.
You got a PhD for that.
There you go. I went to college, you know.
Awesome. So anyway, I don't think that there is a greater prevalence of being messed up in the kink scene than in general society. I think we've just found a way to have a kind of intimacy that is super exciting and super powerful.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe like doing anything that's a little edgy, most people are maybe put off by it.
Right.
I'm a motorcyclist. I love motorcycling. And it keeps me in the moment. It's one of those flow things that just lets me be nowhere but there. And I think that that most of the population thinks motorcyclists are kind of crazy. You know, we're out there exposed to the elements and exposed to the dangers, and yet there's power in being out in the wind and being your own the self-reliance, the presence in the moment that you get from being on a bike. Those are things that other people would say, you've got to be crazy to ride, they're a donor cycle. And you know, if what you want to do is watch your favorite show on TV every night, then rock on. But there are people of us, there are people in the world, like me, who liked that experience, who liked to live life to its fullest.
Right.
And for me, BDSM is part of that, living life to its fullest.
Right. And you just said there about living in the moment. So I'm gathering you don't text while you're driving your motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a notorious thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, drivers and texting and talking on the phone and driving.
Right,
makes
and fiddling with the radio.
Yeah, that's
and
right, and
that,
eating and putting on makeup.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've seen some delightful photos of you on your bike.
Oh, well, thank you.
Don't you know? Mm. So, any reason why a normal person would subject him or herself to pain and humiliation and or inflict pain or humiliation on others? Just to follow the theme that we've been talking about?
Yeah, well, I think there are people who do this without realizing what they're doing. They get into non-consensual power exchange.
Oh, so true.
They pick fights in bars. They want that intensity or the power exchange or what have you, and they don't know how to
negotiate it
and have it in their lives in a healthy, fulfilling way.
Upfront way.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I totally
agree.
So for people who have that need for the intensity, which is a normal thing, maybe it's not everybody, but I don't think it's a pathological condition or at all,
right.
It's absolutely a way of getting at that, getting at those things in a healthy way.
Right. You know, and I always talk about this in terms of degree. I mean, even vanilla folks have a power exchange happening in their relationship. It's impossible to have a relationship where there is no power exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a little slap and tickle kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. in the bedroom with the lights off,
mm-hmm.
Is basically the same thing as, you know, sharp play or needle play, you know, in a dungeon. It's
right.
a matter of degree, I'm guessing, rather than right. kind.
Or if you really get a lot out of bringing your sweetheart her cup of tea mm-hmm. In the morning.
It's so true.
That kind of service
Absolutely.
Is something that is a perfectly natural thing, but it's a power exchange.
Exactly the point. Good for
yeah.
you. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. So let's talk about your involvement in the community. You say, I'm a co-organizer of several parties at the Center for Sex Positive Culture. Again, for those in our audience who don't know the center from a hole in their head, could you tell us a little something about the place and the foundation?
Well, the CSPC is one of the things that makes the Seattle scene such a wonderful thing. It's an organization that was founded about, 12 years ago, maybe? There are facilities down in Seattle, and there are a variety of parties and educational events that happen every day and every night of the week.
It's true enough.
It's amazing.
What a resource. What a treasure trove.
It is. And so because they have so many different rooms and have so many wonderful volunteers who decide on, I want a party for fill in the blank, and they decide to do it, and they
uh-huh.
make a proposal, and it gets approved, and because it's a volunteer-focused organization, it ends up being hugely diverse and just kind of wonderful,
right.
the variety in events that happen there, from kind of dance parties to sex-focused things to I was at a party last night that focuses on really intense medical play.
No kidding.
There's a party for people who like to do kind of animal role play. if you're a, if you like to think of yourself as a dog and you have your handler, this
true.
Is the place to go. And not my kink, but I am awfully glad that there is a place in in this community where the people who are into that can make it happen, can decide to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of skulking around somewhere.
Yeah. You know, no skulking.
Yeah.
Skulking.
So listen, I just noticed that our time for today is up, and I have so many more questions. I'm hoping that you'll come back and talk more with us next week. Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yay! No begging. You were so nice, because I was all prepared, don't you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I don't play with this guy generally.
Okay.
So.
Well, I could beg all the more then. So before we go, Gina, would you give us your website address or tell us where we can find you on the net, and so that we can visit you in the meantime?
I don't really have a kinky presence on the web in general. There's a site called FetLife. I think it bills itself as the Facebook of kink. And I am Gina Hunting there on FetLife.
Okay. And you're also on Facebook, the real Facebook.
Yes. Gina Hunting there as well.
Very cool. So I'll have links to these two places in today's podcast posting. And until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Awesome. Thanks,
Rich. Gina. Bye.
Bye.
Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my chat with Gina Hunting and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
I'm going to finish you before I'm through with you.
I thought Gina was scary. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stock Room. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself. Or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy reviews site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. And look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. And remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these shows. How great is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.